Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
If we buy something for $200,000 every year for 10 years, in 10 years I'm going to have $2 million in property. Well, I kind of achieved that in 3 years. So I thought, okay, well, my next target's $5 million, then $10 million, then $15 million, then $20 million. And we just kept, you know, I never told my husband these goals because he's had a heart attack.
This is Property Investory, where we talk to successful property investors about their stories, mindset, and strategies. I'm Tyron Shum, and in this episode, I'm speaking with Dawn Canali, who brought her financial experience to her husband's business in strawberry farming and began investing in property to set herself up for retirement. Now, she has amassed over $23 million worth of property and is still working full speed ahead. Canali is a serial entrepreneur with many hats: student, farmer, mother, accountant, and property investor.
I've been a strawberry farmer for about 23 years. My husband grew up on the strawberry farm in the Yarra Valley. So I have an accounts background as well and a diploma in financial planning. I'm pretty much a self-taught multimillionaire in property, learning from books and other successful people. And I've accumulated over $23 million in property, returning over $1 million in rental income, plus running a successful strawberry farm 7 days a week. And I have two amazing teenage daughters, aged 16 and 18.
So what does a multi-millionaire with a strawberry farm do in any given day?
At the moment, it's not really strawberry season. So this year, I've taken a year off. It's like a gap year. So I'm studying. So I'm doing lots of research and study to actually write my own book. So I get up 6:30 in the morning and it's pretty much go, go, go with family life and studying until I go to bed at night.
Wow. What are you currently studying?
I'm doing a real estate course with a lady called Dittner Boholt, and I've been doing that for about 3 or 4 years. So I'm a platinum member in that. So we have, you know, monthly meetings and seminars all year round. And I'm also doing lots of other seminars as well. So life coaching, I've done NLP. I'm doing a Tony Robbins Unleash the Power Within next month. I've just done lots of seminars this year. If one comes up and I'm available, I just go to everything. You never stop learning. So I just want to learn everything, and just help people by putting it all in a book. I just want to cater to the younger generation, actually, where they're still like a nice young sponge that want to learn. And I have a bit of a motto that... If I'm happy to help anybody who's prepared to help themselves. So if they I get a lot of people come to me as a mentor, and I just give them some advice on what to do and how to do it. And I really enjoy it. I found that's kind of my calling at the moment, which is why it's kind of inspired me to write a book as well.
Born in the country, Canali's family moved constantly when she was a child, which was something which shaped her into the person she is today.
My father was in the Air Force, so we moved around a lot. And by the time I'd moved here on the farm, I'd moved house 15 times. We just moved around a lot. I was a Victorian champion in karate when I was 15. I trained 6 days a week. I was a year 12 school captain, and all of this has kind of taught me a lot of discipline and to be very adaptive in life. I always feel like I'm a bit of a black sheep because you're always changing schools and having to, you know, build rapport with people and become friends with them, which has made me, I find it's really easy to meet people now. And like even all these seminars I go to, I love networking and meeting new people and sitting near new people. And even with the I Love Real Estate group that I'm with, I try to sit near different people every time. And don't just sit in your comfort zone, you know. You just go, okay, I'm going to meet 10 new people today, and you just go and meet different people. And I find that really easy. I actually enjoy it.
With an enforced military lifestyle as a child, she's now happy to invoke some of those elements into her own household.
Yeah, well, my mum, because Dad was away a lot, my mum kind of had to control the whole house. She handled all the finances and, yeah, she really took control, which is kind of like what I do in my life now. I'm the one who handles all the finances and controls the kids and a little bit of that military style with the children as well, which I like. But it teaches them discipline. Like, my kids are real tough when it comes to that, especially being on a farm as well. I think it just sets you up for life. Like, you're virtually telling them it's not negotiable, this is what you got to do. And, you know, they fight it a bit when they're younger, but now they're older, they're just so strict in their own discipline, which is amazing. Like, their work ethic is amazing. For 16 and 18-year-olds to just know there's jobs to do and they just go and do it. I really love seeing it now. Like, all the hard work when you're a mum pushing your children and then you see it paying off when they're young adults is really rewarding. A lot of education starts at home. It's not just at school. So if you can, you know, teach them to have good beliefs, you know, not limiting beliefs, it sets them up for life. And that discipline, I mean, I'm not saying physical discipline, I'm just saying mental discipline that sets them up for life and just say, look, it's not negotiable. People don't, you know, not everyone likes doing the jobs they do. You know, you just got to suck it up and do it. And they're, you know, like, they're doing really well at school. My oldest daughter's at university and she's just finding it really easy. She is studying photography, but her work ethic is amazing. And she's had her own business for 2 years, even while she was doing year 12. And, I mean, I can talk a little bit about that later, but just, you know, her attitude towards working and not being afraid to make phone calls and reaching out and getting business. She's 18.
In terms of real estate, there was a strong influence from her parents stemming from when Canali was a child.
My mum would buy a house and always went for a bigger, better house. And she'd explain how, oh, you know, we sold this place for $115,000 and then we went and bought this house that's, you know, 5 squares bigger in a better location and we built it for only $10,000 more. So you see the value in properties. And, like, sometimes my dad would just come home and there's a for sale sign out the front of the house. And he'd be like, what are you doing? He'd say, oh, I found this really nice house. It's bigger and better. And all of a sudden we're moving again. But each time, like, she gained equity. And my brother turned out to be a builder. So she started, you know, taking advantage of that as well. It's like, oh, you can build us a bigger and better house. And, you know, so seeing that, yeah, I suppose that was probably my first thing of experience with property. Seeing how, you know, you can gain that equity in houses by building. And, yeah, that was probably the start.
But due to a lack of information, her mother bought property for their family home rather than to build an investment portfolio.
What she had said to me, she wished she knew, you know, all this kind of information years ago. But I think the majority of people just think of their PPR, their, you know, their home, as an investment, and it's not. To me, an investment is something that provides an income. But my mum and a lot of other people tend to think that their house is an investment and They put everything into their house and they don't need anything else. But, you know, what are you going to do, take a brick off to eat it when you want to retire? You know, it doesn't work like that.
Before she began property investing, Canali undertook many different jobs where she became familiar with large figures.
When I was at school, my first job, I really wanted to be in the stock market. I loved the buzz of that, but that's when the crash happened. So I actually had a job lined up and that got cancelled. So then I thought, oh, well, if I try and go through the finance arena, through a bank or something, I might still get to the stock market. So my first job was actually in a bank at Card Services and Head Office in South Melbourne. Then an opportunity came up to change to a construction company for double the income. So I took that pretty quickly. Then that company went broke, went into receivership. So then I worked for another construction company as a personal assistant for an estimator, which was very interesting. Then I worked for Fletcher Jones, head office of accounts receivable, then customs for doing accounts payable. And one thing I found working in lots of different industries is they're all like an apprenticeship to life. You learn little bits out of each job and it kind of helps you with your financial journey. And it also helps you with your money vocabulary. I always use this term, money vocabulary. I don't know if I've stolen it off anyone, but I use it a lot. I thought I created it. But anyway, so I kind of think of it as your money vocabulary, like dealing with lots of money. Like when I worked for customs doing accounts payable, I was paying over $20 million a year in checks. So when you're seeing that kind of money turning over all the time and, you know, like budget, of say $14 million in advertising every year, and you know, it just makes you think of money a little bit differently, as opposed to just feeling in your $500 paycheck every week and how you're going to budget that. You know, so I always say your money vocabulary. Like when you're so used to hearing millions of dollars in figures, that it's not unusual for you to start thinking in those terms. Like my kids, I make them aware of the, you know, the $1 million properties and the hundreds of thousand dollars in rent each one gives you and loans that you're taking. So they're familiar with these kind of figures all the time. Yeah, I think that's really important.
Bring her knowledge of finance to her husband's business, Canali then entered into strawberry farming at a young age.
What year? I think I was about 24.
Oh, still very young.
Yeah. My husband wanted me to quit my job to work on the farm, and I at the time they weren't making a hell of a lot of money. They only had a couple of staff, but because I'd worked for big corporate companies at hundreds and or thousands of staff, and they had four staff, and I said, well, you know what, I'm kind of earning $50,000 a year at the moment at that age, which was excellent. I did have three jobs. And I said, well, if I'm going to quit my job, you kind of have to plant a few more strawberries to cover my income plus do your income. So I said, I'm not quitting until you do that. So then he started expanding. And like the old school Italian farmers don't like paying for wages and they try to do everything themselves, manual labour. It was hard, backbreaking stuff. And I'd say to him, why are you doing that? Isn't there a machine, some kind of implement you can put on the back of a tractor to do that? What are you doing it by hand for? So I kind of came in looking at the big picture and they were so programmed to do everything manually that he'd say, oh, yeah, but that'd cost me $1,500. I go, honey, it's tax deductible. What are you doing? Look at how much time you're wasting doing it. You know, buy the implement, will you? So I started making him think in a different way. So he started buying more tractors, more implements, putting on more staff, expanding the business. And from back then, he's actually got over 10 times bigger than what he was then. And everything back then you kind of like paid cash for it, and whereas I've taught him like leveraging, getting loans for things, and using them to your advantage. That's mainly in property. I mean, I wouldn't get loans for basic stuff on the farm, but tractors definitely. Why not lease it? You know, so we started doing things like that over a 3-year period. Whereas before, they'd have to save up to actually buy it. I said, honey, sometimes the bank is your friend. If you use it to your advantage and you're disciplined in what you buy, even credit cards are good. I don't pay 1 cent in interest on my credit card, and I probably use probably $10,000 to $20,000 a month on my credit card.
Coming up after the break, we'll delve into Canale's property investing journey and how she got started as an investor.
So we bought our first property back in 1998 when I was 5 months pregnant. And I remember saying to my husband about buying a property. I said, oh, you know, I want to start buying. And he said, no, I don't like loans. I don't want to do this.
How she grew her portfolio?
If we buy something for $200,000 every year for 10 years, in 10 years I'm going to have $2 million in property.
And that's next. I'm Tyrone Shum, and you're listening to Property Investory. Hey, podcast listeners, are you enjoying listening to these stories and want more? Then head over to propertyinvestory.com and subscribe to receive your free property case studies that I only send exclusively via email. Just one of the many benefits of being part of this community. These real case studies are from experienced property investors where they share specific numbers of their portfolio, their strategies, and much more. Simply visit propertyinvestory.com to get your free case studies. Now back to the show. Canale was looking for a method to sustain herself and her husband in the future retirement, without the pressure to have to continue to work on the strawberry farm in their old age. So they began to discuss property investing.
The first property we bought, as I said, I could see farming was hard work, and I didn't really want my husband doing that when he was in his 70s and living off a measly pension. So I thought, well, if we can get some properties going and some rental income coming in, hopefully replace our income, then we won't have to work so hard. So that was my strategy. Plus we were paying tax, and I thought, how can I minimise our tax? So there was two things there. So we bought our first property back in 1998 when I was 5 months pregnant. And I remember saying to my husband about buying a property. I said, oh, you know, I want to start buying. And he said, no, I don't like loans. I don't want to do this. And I said to him, honey, you either do it with me or so I'm going to do it on my own. And I was pregnant at the time, and he's like, okay, well, if you're pregnant and you're that strong about it, we'll start looking. So we bought our first place in Ringwood, Victoria, and we did all our due diligence. This place in Ringwood, we knew the freeway was going to come through in years to come, so we went to council and made sure that we were in a safe area. It wasn't going to get taken off us. So we purchased this one particular block, knowing down the track it could have a commercial benefit to it because it was the last property right on the freeway. And as it turned out, Eastlink actually liked the property as well and built their head office on it. So they did compulsory acquisition and forced us to sell, and they saw the commercial benefit of it. So we're a little bit disappointed in that. But saying that, we did get legal action, and we fought it for about 3 or 4 years, and we did end up making a 400% profit on it.
Wow.
It was pretty good. Yeah, we paid about $190 for it, and we ended up selling it for $880, which then gave us quite a bit of money to buy other properties. So I split that and bought two other big properties out of it. I kind of have a rule of not to sell. I like to keep my properties. And at the start, once we bought that one, it was $190, I thought, you know what, I could do this every year. If we buy something for $200,000 every year for 10 years, in 10 years I'm going to have $2 million in property. Well, I kind of achieved that in 3 years. So I thought, okay, well, my next target's 5 million, then 10 million, then 15 million, then 20 million. And we just kept, you know, I never told my husband these goals because he'd have a heart attack.
I wonder how it feels right now after hearing that large amount.
Yeah, well, he's happy now. But, at the time, he's really scared of loans. So if he knew I was just going to keep buying to get more and more loans, then he would have freaked out. So we just did it one at a time. Oh, I think maybe we should buy another one now. I think we're ready for another one now. But in my head, I had these goals and targets that I wanted to reach. And in the end, the value became a bit boring. I suppose once you got to 20 million, it's like, yeah, okay, that's boring now, the next level, blah, blah, blah. But then I started focusing on the rental income. Then I was like, no, you know, because we had a couple in there that would be the land banking. So even though the value was going up, your rent wasn't going up. It might have been going down because it was negatively geared. So then I started focusing on the rental income, and then I wanted a goal of $1 million in rent, and I actually achieved that last year.
Congrats.
Quite happy with that. And sometimes it wasn't buying a new property. It was just redeveloping one you already had or changing tenants and just moving things around a little bit and changing the use of it. So, yeah, that was fun.
Over 19 years, Canali has built her portfolio to contain 15 properties worth over $20 million altogether.
Most of them are Melbourne. I don't do rural, so they're all, you know, not too far from the CBD, except our farm, which is the Yarra Valley. That's 50 k's away, but it's not rural. And I do have two properties up in the Gold Coast as well, in Broadbeach Waters on canals. I mean, I don't get emotionally attached to properties, but I do always have, you know, reasons why I want to buy them. And the Gold Coast one was for, you know, future retirement. I thought, oh, yeah, we go up there every year. We may as well get a tax deduction going up there every year. So we bought a property up there, and every year now when we go, we do stay in hotels because that's rented out permanently, but at least you can claim some travel expenses in going up there and kind of pays for a bit of your holiday every year.
Since achieving her initial goals towards financial freedom, her why has changed. So why hasn't she retired yet?
My husband still does the strawberry farm, and yes, we could have retired quite a few years ago, but because my kids are still quite young, it provides a job for them as well. And it also teaches them work ethic. Like, they still see that, oh, mum and dad are successful and they're still working. So I don't want them to see mum and dad retired and not lazy, but not, you know, working every day with a purpose. I just think that's really important for the kids to see by example. Yeah, and there's a job for them too. So my 16-year-old, they basically can work 7 days a week whenever they want to. I mean, when we're really busy, they kind of have to. We do let them have some time to themselves. It's not that strict because we're a real ball and chain. But the opportunities there, like my oldest who's at uni now, she doesn't need to go and find a job elsewhere because she knows she can always earn income on the strawberry farm, like basically get up in the morning and work. She is a professional photographer now and she does have her own work, but if she has a quiet week, she's always got the strawberry farm, so she can still earn whatever she wants to.
As with most property investing journeys, not everything is a bed of roses. Canali's worst investing moment came with factories and fighting tenants.
I find with property, there's always hurdles. And every property we have ever bought has always had some kind of a problem. And sometimes when there's a problem, you can monetize it. Like if, for example, if there's a property that no one wants to buy, like what's the reasons? Like there could be some issues going on. Like in particular, I bought a block of factories at one stage and the owner was one of the tenants, and there was four other there's four factories, and he was causing problems with all the tenants. There was a bit of they were all fighting. Some of them had to share toilets, and they were locking each other out, so they had to walk up the road, and it was just an absolute headache, and no one wanted to touch it. But I thought it was really good value and pretty much land value, and you got good rent from it just because it had a few headaches, and I saw solutions to those problems. So I bought that, and instead of having a body corporate, obviously when you own it all, you have an owner's corporation, and so I separated off all four of the factories. So they all had their own entrance and driveway, and a fence was there. I, you know, built toilets in the ones that didn't have them to keep everyone separate. They had their own space, their own car parking spaces. So no one had to overlap. There was no reason to get in each other's face and cause issues. The owner, he obviously left once he sold it, so that was vacant, and, which created another problem for people too. They didn't want a vacant property. So we leased that out. Once we fixed up all those problems, and you go around to the tenants and say, you know, what are your issues? How can we help you? Because if you're not happy, I'm not happy. And you sort out all their problems. They love you as a landlord. You love them as tenants. It's a two-way street. You look after everybody. And that's turned out to be one of my best properties. And just because, you know, sometimes when there's problems, you can actually fix them.
Is that a commercial property that you purchased?
Yeah, that's a commercial property, yeah. Actually had five leases on four factories, because there was a billboard as well, a large billboard.
So there was there an opportunity to also adjust the rent due to the fact that you implemented all these changes as well?
Yes. So all of them had opportunities, because we concreted areas, created more car parking areas, we fenced it off so they had their own locked little area. So we could increase the rent. We did that on a gradual basis, not all in one go. And his son also rented one of the factories, and they signed him up on a $12,000 a year lease when it should have been about $36,000. And it was a 3x3x3, and he thought he was kind of safe for 9 years, not noticing that there was a rent review after the 3 years. So that was only a year and a half away we had to wait. And then when that came, we actually increased it to $30,000, and he wasn't happy, so we left. But, you know, we got to, yeah, what can you do, hey? So we increased that to $30,000, and, so there was a lot of upside to it. We saw a lot of potential. But sometimes headaches can be potential.
But the most exciting moment for her was when she paid only $100,000 for a property worth $1.8 million.
Look, discovering the power of leverage, that one was a real wow. That was an aha moment for me, because we'd always wanted to pay 20 or 30% deposit on any of our properties. So when this particular factory come up for sale, the block of four factories, when that came up for sale, I was at the auction, and again, no one wanted to touch it. And my hubby was back at the farm, and I was actually going just to have a look, but I took my checkbook with me just in case. And it got passed in, and at the end of it, I kind of hung around because I could see the husband and wife arguing and with the agent, and they wanted to sell because it was a divorce. And I went up to the agent and I said, look, I've got my checkbook here right now. I'm prepared to give you $1.8 million for the property, and I'll give you a check now of $100,000 if you want to take it. So they went back to the owners, and they obviously agreed on it. But the aha part of it was that I only put $100,000 down, and I borrowed the whole $1.8 million which again freaked hubby out, but I knew my figures. So, put 100,000 on it, and it was paying about $120,000 in rent. No, $170,000 in rent. And the loan repayments are only going to be about $120,000. So it's $50,000 positive cash flow. And all I had to do was put $100,000 on. So when I worked out there was a 50% return on investment, I was like, wow, I can borrow the whole lot and only put, $100,000 on. That's when I was like, wow, I love this. So my hubby just freaked out at the loan. Oh, my God, it's a $1.8 million loan. What are you doing? And I said, honey, look at the figures. We can cover it. So obviously you have to have equity in other properties because you've got to have the 30% equity. But then I did that a couple of other times and did exactly the same thing, and they all paid like $50,000 positive cash flow. So because we were earning good money from the strawberry farm, I didn't – enough to pay the deposit. I didn't need the extra – positive cash flow. So I'd always reinvest it back on or put it back onto the loan. So I paid off my loans quite quickly. And whatever I had from the strawberry farm too, like it was really big for me to just pay down those loans as quick as possible. And then you're getting more equity in it, which is more borrowing power. So the power of leverage, I think, was my aha moment.
So, inspired by Canali's story and her amazing aha moment, we'll continue the conversation with her in a future episode on property investory. We'll talk about her property investing strategy.
So I don't believe in taking a lot of risks, but I do believe in starting small and paying off what you can, try and get some capital growth in it.
Her success habits for property investing.
I just never give up. If I believe in something, I just get focused on it.
And that's next time in a future episode of Property Investory. Also, if you haven't subscribed to receive your free property case studies that I only send out exclusively via email, you can text me your email address to 0499881040 to subscribe. These real case studies are from experienced property investors where they share specific numbers of their portfolio, the strategies, and much more. Simply text me your email address to 0499881040 to get your free case studies. Thanks for listening.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.